Amazing. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Rachel. So good to see you. And thank you, Kelman. It's so good to be here. It's been a really long time. It's great to be together. Thank you for the opportunity to learn and to teach together. Also, I think it's just very special. I'll just note that today's Yom Yun is being sponsored by the Almond family, which is actually my family. My Sharon's father, my great uncle Label, was my Bubby's brother and was a really force and formative person in our family. So it feels really special. And so should all the neshamot should have an aliyah from our learning together today. Our topic today, and we're going to just jump right in. Our topic today is construction, what we call construction of the self in Megillat Rut. And it engages with questions of identity and building identity and different aspects of identity. I will at this point, I didn't send the sources in advance. I will post a source sheet right now. We'll get to it in just a second. Hold on, I'm just pasting a link for it. It's a digital page. So we're going to be looking at construction of the self and identity. And there are so many ways to enter and themes and points of entry in Megillat Rut. We can enter through the lens of immigration. We can enter through the lens of poverty, food insecurity, community building, conversion. But the one that we'll engage with today and that really has always spoken to me is that of identity and construction of the self. And in many ways, Megillat Rut is a book about identity, individual identities, collective identities, how are identities built? How do they shift? How do we perceive ourselves? How are we perceived by others? How is this all portrayed in biblical narratives? And how can it help us better understand ourselves and ultimately kind of move to better versions of who we are and how we look at others? So with those things as background, we're gonna jump in. There are lots of ways, and we don't have hours and hours, but there are lots of ways. And here I'll just share the screen so we can see a summary. One second. Okay, so we're gonna get toggle back and forth. Hold on, sorry. Okay, can everyone see? Just thumbs up. Okay, great. There's just a quote here from the beginning from the literary critic Roland Barthes about identity. Everyone is invited to read that afterwards. You have this source. But there are lots of ways to achieve characterization in Tanakh. That's not the topic of our shiur writ large, but just as we think about identity, there are many, many different ways that we can achieve that sort of questions of identity and characterization. We can look at, right, sometimes in developing characters in Tanakh, we might look at how the text or the narrator actually describes the character, what physical details are included. We have that with Bathsheba, Asaph, Eli. These are all just examples that we can look at, you can look at a different time. There might be a description of inner thoughts, and we can get to know the characters, what they were thinking, what they saw, what they understood. There's examples with Eli and Chana and Yosef's brothers, Achei Yosef. We have sort of a description of inner thoughts. We can get to know characters through their actions and their speech. We have with Abraham. We can have an understanding of characters through contrast and different kinds of contrast, sometimes contrast within their own behavior or contrast with other characters in Tanakh. And we can have an understanding of characters through their names, titles, and references. For a wonderful discussion of all of this and the ways that we can achieve characterization, there is a wonderful book by Professor Adele Berlin, Poetics and Interpretation of Biblical Narrative. That was kind of just to give us a sense of, in literature in general and in Tanakh, we can look at all of these different things to get a sense of building of who our characters are, right? These are different techniques to see the impact of their development and how they construct their own identity. We're going to do that with two characters. We only have time for two characters today in Megillat Rut. We'll start with Naomi and end with Rut. So let's take a look at, right, certain case studies in character development and formation of the self and identity. And we'll look at, just go straight to the text and we'll go back and forth to the text. Let's look at how these techniques impact our characters. let's begin with Naomi. At the beginning of the book, right, the beginning of Megillat Rut, we have an example, when we talked about name changes, of a direct and very, very obvious name change, which reflects a change in status, right? Towards the end of Perek Aleph, we have Naomi after suffering, and again, for time, we'll kind of toggle back and forth between reading the text and me just summarizing the text. But we have towards the end of Perek Aleph, after suffering the loss of her husband and her two sons in Sde Moab, Naomi returns with her daughter-in-law Ruth to Beit Lechem Yehuda, and she says, "I'm stripped of who I am, right? No longer call me Naomi," when everybody kind of says, "Can this be Naomi? Hazot Naomi?" She says, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because God has made my lot very, very bitter." And what we see here, when we opened with sort of the obvious and direct use of names and name changes, we have a very direct change on the part of Naomi herself, right? After all the hardship that she's endured, she basically says, "Don't call me, right, Naomi anymore. That's no longer who I am. I can't hold that piece of who I am. It's totally foreign to who I am because I've suffered so much. You can't call me sweetness. I have, my lot has been bitter, and that's now, right, taken over my identity." But I want to look at a bit more subtle, and less obvious use of names with reference to Naomi in the opening of the Perek, right? Initially, and we'll flip up to the beginning here. Just close that, right? In the beginning of the Perek Aleph, when we're introduced to Elimelech and Naomi, we're introduced to them simply as Ish v'Ishto. And only in Pasuk Bet are they identified with proper names, which are used through Pesukim Bet and Gimel. But then in Pasuk Hey, so we get their names. But in Pasuk Hey, after Elimelech and his sons die, the narrator refers to Naomi not by her name, but simply as Isha, right? Vayemutu gam shnei hamachlon v'kilyon, batisha'er ha'isha mishnei yeladeha u'mei isha. When those two, Machlon and Kilyon, also died, so the woman was left without her two sons and without her husband. And the usage here by the narrator, it seeks to convey a very, very intense emotional effect. The narrator wants to emphasize, "Batisha'er ha'isha levada," the woman stands alone. With the death of her husband and her sons, Naomi has been stripped entirely of her identity and that which made her so important. And at this point in the story, it doesn't matter that she's Naomi. We were introduced to her a few psukim earlier as Naomi, but it doesn't matter. She's simply Isha. She's in a strange land with no husband or sons. And in antiquity, a woman would generally move from her father's house to her husband's house. And now, without either, Naomi no longer has an obvious social identity. She's no longer connected to anyone. She's in a strange land. She's not in her husband's house. She's not in her father's house. And there's no obvious place for her in society. She has no personal identity, no social standing, and no, really no sense of belonging at all. So when we think about construction of the self, this is almost a stripping of herself because of the events that transpired, and particularly in antiquity. And the narrator specifically is conveying that effect by saying, "Look, we knew this person's name in the opening psukim of the Megillah, and now it reverts back after the events and saying she's entirely different and just refers to her as Isha." So what we have here is Naomi later on very much giving her own very directly and objectively giving herself a new name as a result of the hardship that she endured and the bitterness that she endured. But the narrator very, very suddenly also telling us this is a woman who now essentially has been emptied from everything that has given her significance in her relationship. And that sets the stage for an entirely different relationship to come into play, to give Naomi significance, to fill that void. And that's the relationship with her daughter-in-law, Ruth. Now, we don't have time to look at how Ruth's relationship vis-a-vis Naomi filled that, but I invite you on Shavuot as you read the Megillah and as you listen to Megillah to sort of pay attention to how that relationship sets in, both in terms of how it's described and how words and titles and descriptive factors are used in order to build that relationship and construct a new self. Opening with Naomi. So Naomi is our sort of opening character. But we'll spend the rest of the time on Ruth herself. And just going back, sorry, to our outline here of our source sheet. 1 second. Okay. We'll look at Ruth in Prakim, Bet, and Gimel in three different ways. Ruth as referred to by the narrator, Ruth as referred to by herself, and Ruth as referred to by Boaz. So in contrast to the few namings in reference to Naomi, there are many, many different namings, titles, descriptive markers that are used in connection to Ruth by the narrator, by the characters, and by Ruth herself. And again, given the time, we're getting a taste, and we'll look at each one of these categories as a way to look at how Ruth develops, changes, constructs herself, builds her identity. So let's first look at how the narrator refers to Ruth throughout the story. And here I'll summarize for you this one. Throughout Perek Aleph, the narrator either refers to Ruth by name, specifically using her name, or when in reference to Naomi, she's referred to as Kalata, her daughter-in-law. But at the end of Perek Aleph, the narrator's reference changes entirely. And in Pasuk Chofet, in the end of, sorry, right, in Pasuk Chofet, she's referred to as Vatashav Naomi Virut HaMoaviyah. Thus, Naomi returns from the country of Moab. She returned with her daughter-in-law, Ruth, the Moabite. So we have at this moment, after being referred to as Ruth, and after being referred to by the narrator as Kalata, her daughter-in-law, as soon as they return to Israel, the narrator refers to her as Ruth HaMoabiyah. And throughout the rest of the book, when the narrator refers to Ruth, that title is used, Ruth HaMoaviyah, with a couple of exceptions which are particularly notable, and we'll look at those together soon. But the reason for this shift from Ruth to Ruth HaMoaviyah by the narrator is presumably based on the geographic relocation of Ruth and Naomi, right, going from Moab and returning to Israel. But in other realms, it also represents a shift in identity. And here we have at this point in the story, it's Ruth who's undergoing a transition in character and development of the self. She's now accompanying Naomi to a place where she herself is an outsider and will always, or maybe not always, but for the most part, be viewed as a foreigner. And the whole story, the whole narrative, the whole Megillah seems to be grappling with this issue of identity, construction of oneself. And in this case, and in this instance, it emerges from beneath the surface, right? We spoke in our first example of Naomi about being in a constant state of flux with regard to her identity. What is it that defines her and defines her identity? What is she without the people in her life? Regarding Ruth, the narrator is raising a different set of issues related to identity. Here, the narrator is emphasizing Ruth's nationality and the fact that she's a foreigner and is different as something that defines her. We'll take a look just very briefly at an excerpt from Rav Yoni Grossman, sharing again. Our source sheet, sorry. Okay, you have first just in your source sheet, you'll have, if you click on this, you can just get to the text of Ruth on on Safaria. But we'll read just a couple of lines from Yoni Grossman's Reading Root with Winnicott, the psychologist Winnicott, Boas and Naomi as transitional objects. This is from a collection, Gleanings, Reflections on Root, published by Corin a few years back. What he raises here, which is really interesting, is that when we adapt and when we change and when we move, a really interesting point, and when we grow, we're not just connecting to something, but we are disconnecting from something. So we'll just read a bit of this together. The Book of Ruth, as we have said, Ruth's tale. The Book of Ruth is, sorry, as we have said, Ruth's tale of transition. At the very beginning of the story, she's forced to say goodbye to her husband, to the love of her life, to her hopes and dreams, due to circumstances out of her control. But when she actively chooses to join Naomi, the act of severance is of much greater consequence. She has chosen to cut herself off from her culture, her family, her people, and her mother tongue. Even if chapter one mentions returning to Beit Lechem a number of times, and the reader senses the sympathy and solidarity of the two figures of Naomi and Ruth through their dialogue, chapter two presents the readers with the other side of the coin in the following statement by Boaz: how you left your father, your mother, and your birthplace to go to a people you had not previously known. His statement gives us a different perspective on the story, one that received less emphasis in chapter one. We'll just end with this line. Ruth's choice to join Naomi is not only a decision to attach herself to something new, but a decision to cut old ties loose. And then he continues and creates a parallel with Abraham, comparing and contrasting Abraham's sort of identity shift in cutting ties as attaching to someone else. And so this is also an extremely important point when we think about, I think a very fascinating point when we think about the psychological and the adaptive ways that we go through our own identity transformation. Sometimes we all change and we adopt new things and we join new things and we connect to new things, but those connections also very formatively disconnect us from other things as well. And so that's what's being highlighted in this passage. And when we think of this as a tale of transition and a tale of development of Ruth, it's not just I'm joining the people, right? This is not just becoming part of a new society, a new tribe, a new religion, whatever we want to call it, a new family, but actually a conscious choice to disconnect from something else, cutting old ties loose. Putting that out there as both for the story and for our own understanding and thinking of how we grow and how we develop. And going back to, I'm just gonna continue to our next source here, and then we'll go back to the text. Going back to Ruth HaMoaviah, right? So the narrator sort of highlighting before she develops, right? The narrator is highlighting, wait a minute, she is this outsider. So she's cut ties loose, but she hasn't yet quite engaged or developed or become part of this new community of people, this new family. And I think this raises a really important piece when we think about, again, what is being focused on when the narrator refers to her throughout, except for a couple of points at the end, as Ruth HaMoaviah, Ruth the Moabite, Ruth the foreigner. Often, one marker of identity becomes the defining factor, right? There's one thing that stands out that becomes what we encapsulate as who a person is or what they are all about. And I think this again raises, and I'm going to again summarize here, a passage from the Nobel Prize-winning economist, Amartya Sen. It's written extensively about this, a fascinating point in his discussions about economics, global poverty, and identity. But he talks about an observation about individuals' identity in general, right? All individuals are multifaceted with many different factors contributing to their personalities. But under certain circumstances And in particular places, there's often going to be one identifying characteristic that becomes the most important one that identifies each of us. And often it's hard for people to get beyond that, right? He himself, when asked to describe himself, describes himself in an interview on NPR as an Asian, Indian citizen, Bengali with a Bangladeshi history, a dabbler in philosophy, an economist, an author, a man, a feminist, heterosexual, continued on and on and on. And he basically said, I can add 76 more descriptive markers. And his point is that individuals are a collection of different identities rather than having one single overriding identity, such as religion, nationality, or civilization. And his point in his book, Identity and Violence, is he argues that global peace and development are dependent on a greater understanding of the many layers of who we are, and not just a reduction of individuals to a single overriding identity, which is often based on civilization, often based on religion. And we seem to have here, right, a similar phenomenon, at least according to the narrator in Megillat Ruth. The most important and defining characteristic that we know about Rut, at least at the outset, is that she is a Moavia. She is a foreigner. And that colors the reader's whole view of her, probably reflecting what the people of Beit Lechem, what society thought about her. There's that piece that is overriding vis-a-vis everyone else. Now let's look briefly at how Rut refers to herself and how Boaz refers to Ruth throughout the Megillah. And again, here, I invite you to look at the text. I'll summarize for you how Ruth refers to herself throughout Prakim Bet and Gimel. Ruth uses three terms to refer to herself when speaking to Boaz. First, she refers to herself in Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud, as a Nochriya, a foreigner, right? The context is after he finds her in the fields, inquires as to who she is, orders his men not to bother her, and she says, "Why are you so kind to single me out when I am a foreigner? I am a Nochriya." Then, moving to the second time she gives herself a title in Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Gimel, a continuation of that story, she calls herself a Shifcha. Right? Boaz responds to Ruth's question, saying, "I've been told of all that you've done for your mother-in-law, how you left your homeland," and he gives her a bracha, and he says, "You are so." He gives her a bracha, and she says, "You are most kind to comfort me and to speak to me as your maidservant, as your shifcha, even though I am not as worthy as one of your maidservants." So she goes from nochriya to shifcha, and the third time she refers to herself when speaking to Boaz, she calls herself an Amma, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yutet. The context here is in the middle of the night when Ruth comes to Boaz on the threshing floor and he realizes someone is there. He can't see who it is, and she says, "I am Ruth, your Amma," right? Anochi Ruth Amatecha, spread your robe over your handmaid, for you are a Goel, you are the Redeemer. So looking at Ruth's own development, she herself progresses. She goes from being a foreigner, all in the context of, a relationship of servitude and dependency, but she moves from being a stranger, nechriya, to being a shifcha, and then to being an amma, right? Shifcha is a shifcha Kanaanite, an amma is amma Ivriya, it is of a higher status. So she herself, looking at herself, kind of moves through this status, from being complete foreigner to someone with a bit of a higher status, all again within the relationship and dependency. That's how Ruth kind of views her own development. In the same way that Ruth's understanding of herself develops and progresses, Boaz's understanding, looking at her as well, kind of moves through the terminology that he uses for her, also develops. The first time he refers to her in Perek Bet Pasuk Hey, he calls her a na'ara, right? A totally neutral term. Who is this girl? Whose girl is that? Then upon learning who she is, few psukim later in Pasuk Chet, he calls her biti, right? Listen to me, daughter. Don't go glean in somebody else's field. Don't go elsewhere, but stay here close to my girls. So he starts with na'ara to biti. And finally, when he refers to her in Perek Gimel, when she comes to him in the middle of the night on the threshing floor, He calls her, right? Eshet Chayil, right? Ki eshet chayil at, right? Have no fear. I'll do whatever you want, for all the elders of my town know that you are an eshet chayil, a worthy woman. And if we look back at Perek Bet to how the narrator originally introduced Boaz, we find a striking parallel there between the term that Boaz uses for Ruth and the term that Boaz was introduced with in the beginning, right? The very same title that the narrator used for Boaz initially when introducing him, right, is Ish Gibor Chayil, Mimishpachat Elimelech Ushmo Boaz, right? That very same Ish Gibor Chayil is now being used, that Boaz was introduced with at the beginning, is now being used by Boaz to refer to Ruth. And it's been suggested, Professor Adele Berlin, that has suggested that by using the phrase Eshet Chayil for Ruth, Boaz raises Ruth's status to that of his own. Now she's worthy of being married to an Ish Gibor Chayil, which is what he is. And so this offers some sort of a resolution to the underlying tension that we pointed out earlier, which is exhibited through the narrator's use of the phrase Moavia to describe Ruth. By the end of the story, Ruth has moved from being a foreigner in everyone's eyes, right? Both in and in her own eyes and her own mind and in the eyes of Boaz, from a lowly status to one of full equality. We don't have time, but again, I invite everyone to look at the bracha that's given at the end of the Megillah, of the townspeople, where she takes on an even higher status because she moves from a Moaviyah to a Nochriyah to a Na'arah to a Bat to an Eshet Chayil, and then at the end to a Ha'isha Haba'a El Beitecha, right? The wife who enters your home. She's progressed both in the narrator's eyes. She's progressed in her own eyes. She's progressed in the community's eyes. She's progressed in Boaz's eyes. And so what we have here in the thematic sense of identity, and we're just getting a touch here, what emerges throughout the Megillah and highlighted here at the very end is this constant shifting and evolution of identity and who we are. Right. Chazal points out that what Megillat Rut comes to teach us is that from a national and religious perspective, even a Moaviyah can become part of the Jewish people and a progenitor of the Jewish king. Right. But I think there's also something much, much more. Right. There's a much broader message is that we are all moving. We are all changing. And kind of no matter what particular circumstances we're born into, be they geographic, socioeconomic, political, an individual can always say, can try to, and often always transcend and arise above those limitations. And so with the last 2 minutes, all of this, right? 10:15 is when we stop. Okay. All of this prompts us to think about a number of things, that characters are in a constant state of flux. We see that both throughout the narrative, the way the narrator refers to them, the way they refer to themselves, and the characters have many different aspects to them, multiple identities. And the question becomes, what do you focus on? What's the one that jumps out to the fore that we think about and say, oh, is this woman a foreigner, right? Is that the overriding identity? And this presses us to think about the multifaceted nature of all of our identities and the people that we meet, right? The question is ultimately, who determines our identity? Is it something that we determine? Is it something that's determined by someone else? Is identity merely just a construct of living in relation to other people, right? Because she was living amongst other people. Characters have multiple identities, and the question becomes, what do we focus on? And how do our identities shift and change as we change, as society changes, and as our environments changed? There's lots of things that we can focus on, yet under certain conditions and in particular circumstances, there will often be one that becomes the most important and defines each one of us. Often it's hard for people to get beyond that. Often it's hard for us to get beyond that. But hopefully an analysis of the Megillah will allow us to see the complexity and the construction of oneself and the construction of others, or that sort of the orientation of others as they look at different characters and move through those different phases. So I invite everyone, and first of all, to look more carefully at the Megillah over Shavuot, and thank you for engaging with this sort of brief, but I hope rich engagement with who we are, what we are all about, and how we move through those different phases. I didn't see any questions in the chat, so that's why I didn't leave the 5 minutes. But if there are any questions, we have, what, 30 seconds to offer questions, or you're invited to email me afterwards. But thank you,
The
everyone, so much.
next speaker might give you an extra minute or two, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Okay, thank you very much. We're getting a taste of Shavuot. That's the whole idea, of course. Eight speakers, and really thank you. Nice to have you back, and we look forward to having you again in the future. And
Thank
now
you.
we'll welcome her husband. We have a tag team of Shira Hecht Kohler and Aaron Kohler. So that's
Not
really.
Aiden. That is not my husband's, but Aiden can move up soon.
Okay.
Thank you, Shira.